PR Station.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It has been an eventful couple of years in Raleigh as the Republican-controlled legislature has been putting its stamp on things, and these moves have been notable not only because they signal a change in direction, but also because they have revealed some cracks in GOP party unity at the state level, with the State House taking stands that don't always line up with those taken in the governor's mansion. That is just one thing we'll talk about with our guest today, former Charlotte Mayor and now Governor of North Carolina, Pat McCrory. Welcome back to the program.
It's great. Great to be back home in Charlotte.
Already I see you taking issue with me, but that's okay.
You're wonderful.
Thank you. We're going to open the phones and let people ask you questions of their own at 704-926-9323. That's 704-926-WFAE. You can also get to us on Facebook and Twitter at WFAE and CharlotteTalks at WFAE.org if you want to email. When you went to Raleigh, there was a great excitement on the part of a lot of people in this part of the state, because we had a mayor of Charlotte in Raleigh. The great state of Mecklenburg was going to be represented. Tom Tillis at the time was a Speaker of the House, I believe. And then what we witnessed was a power grab on the part of the legislature to try to get our airport, to claw back money. We've watched that now, with the business privilege tax, with the proposal to change the way state tax, sales tax revenues are allocated. None of this, I don't think, is your doing, but do you find it frustrating as a former Charlotte mayor?
It's part of the messy process of democracy, but the good news is this. Let me tell you, since you kind of introduced it as the half glass half full, half empty, let me talk about glass half full. We also had major tax reform, which did help this region and all regions of the state, where we reduced the income tax and the corporate tax, which makes us competitive to South Carolina, where we were not competitive to South Carolina in many ways. Our unemployment rate was the fifth highest in the nation when I came in. Now we're not even the top 25 in unemployment. We're in the top 20, I believe, in unemployment. We gave major teacher pay raises for the first time in 5 years. We paid off a $2.5 billion debt for unemployment compensation. And we also changed a transportation formula, which used to be made by the good old boys in Raleigh and now is based upon not politics, but formulas, which include congestion. How's that for a consideration of where we build our roads? Is congestion, public safety, and economic development. I mean, those are three or four major dynamic changes that have occurred in the state of North Carolina in the past 3 years.
Some people would take exception to a couple of things you just said. One is, I've heard anecdotally that some people are being shocked by the fact that they're paying more in North Carolina state tax than they did before because of some exemptions being removed.
I'd say about well over 90% of the people who have a job are paying much less taxes than they were before. In fact, people are paying about 2% less net income tax and 2% less corporate tax.
And nobody likes to pay taxes. That's true. But we seem suddenly not to be.
But you are paying now more for a movie theater ticket.
Yeah,
I transferred some taxes where you pay 50 cents more for a movie. And we changed the tax system on not punishing those who work, but taxing more on consumption. And I made that commitment when I became governor that I'd do just that.
But there are some people who
Some people.
Well, they're out there. There's some people.
Are you reading the Charlotte Observer
just
again?
Just look out the window. There are some people out
some
there.
Some people
right?
out there. Okay, it's a great window.
Thank you.
Aren't any people outside your window. I noticed.
All right.
There are no people outside your window, right?
But some people would say that suddenly we can't afford anything. You cut taxes and now we can't afford anything. We can't afford schools. We can't afford this. We can't afford that. We can't afford infrastructure.
It's not happening. In fact, our revenue stream is coming in pretty good. Now, we did anticipate somewhat of a revenue deficit because I had to make a compromise. But fact of the matter is the economy is recovering and we're getting more money in than we ever anticipated. In fact, we're getting a lot of sales tax revenue in right now. The numbers are looking very good, but it's still a very, very tight budget, and I've made some very difficult decisions, just like they're having to do in the city of Charlotte, just like they're having to do in towns across North Carolina. But the economy is coming back, but we still have a ways to go.
And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, because the last time you were here, we talked a lot about education, but you said we gave major teacher pay raises. I think teachers would take issue with that.
Absolutely not. Well, the unions would take major issue with that.
I think individual teachers would.
Absolutely. Well, if you talk to a teacher right now who got you have some starting teachers who are making $30,000 a year minus the supplement. not including the supplement, in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, and now they're going to be making $35,000 a year. That's a $5,000 increase. That's for teachers with 1 to 7 years of experience. You're going to have some teachers.
What about
the
veteran teachers?
You're getting some teachers with 19 years of experience who are going to be getting over 10% increases during the step-up process. So what you read is some of the unions, you know, a Republican gave major pay raises, of course they're going to complain. If this were another governor doing it, they'd be praising it. But they had not been given major pay increases in 5 years, and I'm proud of the pay increases that we gave last year, and I have a part of my budget to continue to make the promise for especially starting teachers and teachers with 1 to 7 years of experience, which is when we had the highest attrition in teachers in North Carolina.
You just said a second ago that there are municipalities like Charlotte who've had to tighten their belts a little bit because of the environment here. But part of that is due to things that have been clawed back, like the business privilege tax. As a former mayor, you have an understanding of what the loss of that revenue means to cities like Charlotte. What have you said to the legislature about this?
Oh, I'm working with mayors, and I met with the mayor of Huntersville just last week, and we're trying to work on a proposal to allow the cities to recover that money, and that's my goal. That's what we're working on right now. We have to have some proposals, and I'm asking them to give me some proposals that I can bring the legislature also, and I'm very open to those proposals, which is costing the city of Charlotte $2 million for sure.
Why did they do it in the first place?
I think they felt like, the tax was very unevenly distributed and given to businesses. You had so many businesses take advantage of loopholes with a business license tax, and it felt like it was a tax, especially towards small businesses, which was harmful to North Carolina. The bad news is it was more beneficial to the government, city government, than it was state government. But it was not a well-thought-out tax. In fact, the current mayor, Clodfelder, was also opposed to that tax.
Sales taxes, the most recent blow to urban areas, is going to be this proposed redistribution or reallocation of the sales tax. As I understand it now, currently, 75% of the sales taxes collected go back to the municipalities in which they are collected, with the rest of the money being evenly distributed among the rest of the state. What they want to do
per capita.
What they want to do now is change the way that's done. And Mayor Clodfelter has told me that it would be a disaster. And you have said that you believe this will cause great harm to the economic engines of the state, being Charlotte, Wake County, Durham. Why don't legislators see it this way?
Well, it's a very poorly thought out bill. I don't think in the introduction of that bill they haven't done the math and the finances, and the math doesn't add up. It's a tax increase on literally millions of people in North Carolina. And, it's
How is it a tax increase?
Well, because towns and especially travel and tourism areas and large cities are going to have to tax their citizens to make up for that incredible loss revenue, and I'm totally opposed to that proposal. I don't know how much that proposal has legs, but I think it's a mistake, and it's classic class warfare, in which you usually hear that from the Democrats, and it's coming from more conservative Republicans.
You've said this several times, that it's class warfare. So do you see these code words? I think it was...
it's almost John Edwards type of language that is being used by my own party, and I disagree with John Edwards when he was a U.S. senator, and I disagree with that type of language coming out of my... our state Senate.
Harry Brown, who's the Senate Majority Leader,
good friend,
used the term two North Carolinas, seeming to justify taking money from wealthier regions of the state and giving it to the poor regions. Here is what he said.
When you consider that Mecklenburg, Wake, and Durham counties were awarded over 85% of the state JDIG incentive funds last year and received more dollars under the new transportation funding plan, even as they already receive a disproportionate share of sales tax revenue, it seems that most of the state is set up for failure by the status quo. These inequities create a vicious cycle that forces rural counties to fund their public schools and basic infrastructure needs through sky-high property taxes. And sky-high property taxes in much of rural North Carolina create another major obstacle to new industry locating and creating jobs there. This is the big reason we have two North Carolinas, one that is booming and one that is busting.
Do you agree that we have two North Carolinas?
No, absolutely not. We have about 30 different North Carolinas. I mean, we have different Charlottes within Charlotte. We have different Charlottes. And I had to deal with this same issue when I was mayor of Charlotte for 14 years. Mm-hmm. As the South was growing several years, then the East complained, and then the West complained, and then the North started doing well. And
people, but the West and East still complain, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and what you don't do is punish one area of town and say, well, we're going to limit the growth of one area of our state in order to help another area of the state. That's not how the marketplace works. And this is exactly what the liberal Democrats used to say, and they say it nationally. And I'll be even. I disagree when the Republican says the same thing.
But if he's right,
let me correct some of the math that he's using too. He's including JDIG funding, for example.
JDIG, by the way, is Job Development Investment.
Yeah, that's net new revenue coming from new businesses coming in North Carolina, where if they bring new jobs and pay new taxes, it's a refund back to those businesses. It's not any money being taken out of the rural areas or the urban areas. It's net new money. So he's comparing apples and oranges and looking at the ledger sheet.
But you just said, prior to our playing his piece of tape, that if this state tax, sales tax revenue proposal goes through, the major areas, the tourist areas in the West and the East and Charlotte, places like that, will suffer because they'll have to raise taxes on their citizens
because
to make up for the lost revenue. He's saying that – well, hold on.
I've heard what he said. Played the tape.
Well, let me tell you. Let me repeat it.
Okay. I'll hear it again.
He is saying, you're a bad guy. He is saying that they have to raise property taxes to pay for schools.
Charlotte and Mecklenburg County and Wake County and Durham County also have to raise property taxes. The sales tax money is going into the infrastructure that has to support these people coming in and spending money, like the malls. Mm-hmm. We have to build new roads to support those malls. You have to build new infrastructure and water and sewer. So that money is going to have to come from somewhere. And so that's what the sales – and the other thing I want to mention is areas like Wake, Durham, and the travel and tourism areas, they have future bonds that are dependent upon the growth of the sales tax. If you cut that out from under them, it's going to cause some major harm.
Well, you said it will decimate the travel and tourism industry in the West, in the cities, and the coastal beach areas. In the paper this morning, there was a disagreement about how much money this will be. One figure is $2.6 million. The other is somewhere in the neighborhood of $30-some million dollars. Where do you think it is?
Well, that's the problem. He introduced a bill in which he hasn't gotten the facts, and a lot of populist rhetoric is out there dividing North Carolina when, in fact, we need to unite North Carolina, all the regions of North Carolina. And even to describe North Carolina as rural and urban is misleading. It's kind of like the way the Washington talk is. Everything's middle class in Washington. You know, everyone's for the middle class. Well, one thing I've learned is 90% of America considers themselves middle class, so no one's defined it. The same thing is using the term rural. I know people Mecklenburg County who consider themselves rural. Union County would consider themselves rural, but they're in the biggest metropolitan region in the state next to Wake and Durham County. So to use these terms that aren't defined and then to introduce a bill that's not defined, I think is counterproductive to good government. And I will speak against my fellow Republicans just like I speak against bad plans by fellow Democrats.
And we're going to talk about that because there seems to be a lot of that going on between you and particularly the Senate and Phil Berger. But we'll come back and talk about that.
I did it here when I was mayor of Raleigh.
I didn't say you
did. I'm
just saying this is what's going on.
Hey,
I'm just here to report. That's all.
It's great. You're great.
When we come back.
You're one of the best.
We'll also take – thank you. You told the guy yesterday on Channel 36. We'll come back and take some phone calls as well. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Nexen Pruitt, hosting an LCS webinar series focusing on updates in South Carolina and North Carolina employment law, April 8th at noon. Topic, workplace harassment or harassment. Details online at nexenpruitt.com. And Creative Loafing's Moo and Brew Craft Beer Burger and Music Festival, Saturday, April 11th at the NC Music Factory. Festival grounds, over 40 craft beers, Charlotte's best burger competition, and live music by Langhorne Slim and The Law. Tickets at mooandbrew.com. www.fae.com. For years, the state was known for its emphasis on higher education, but budget cuts by the legislature have called that impression into question. And some look now at the cost of college as not being worth it. Kids are leaving school with tons of debt and unprepared for jobs in the 21st century, or so some say. We'll talk to four college presidents about their views on this tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the co-pilot who crashed a German plane had reportedly been treated for depression. New airline safety rules being considered and compensation for victims' families.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're here with Governor Pat McCrory, and we're going to take your phone calls at 704-926-WFAE, and we will begin with John in Charlotte. John, welcome to the program.
Mike, thank you so much. Governor, thank you for everything you do, not only for the city of Charlotte, but the entire state of North Carolina. I truly appreciate everything you're doing for us.
Thank you very much.
Speechless, aren't you?
I don't know what to say. I'll tell you, I love being governor. I love being mayor. It is a great honor and a great privilege. And, you know, I get a few black eyes here and there, but it's a real privilege. And, you know, I'm fighting my battles. I had a lot of battles here when I was mayor for 14 years, and I've got some battles in Raleigh. The difference in Raleigh, Mike, is kind of different. I came in as an outsider in both parties, frankly. And I came in from an outsider, grew up in Jamestown, but really developed my leadership skills for many years right here in Charlotte. And sometimes an outsider, I have to step on some toes of both parties. And I've done just that.
Some have said that you came in a little naive, to Raleigh at least, a little naive about how it all works. And that has led to some of the
I don't know if naive is the right word, because my whole cabinet came in. And literally it took 6 to 8 months to find the skeletons within the bureaucracies and the money that was hidden by previous administrations and people who weren't showing up to work for 3 or 4 months, and you had to go hunt them down. Hmm. I mean, Sharon Decker, I'll never forget. I mean, we came in. There's not like a smooth transition. When you come in, Sharon Decker, I remember when she was my first day as Commerce Secretary, she didn't know where the Commerce Building was. And she finally got there, and someone says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm the new Commerce Secretary." And the person points to the elevator, that'll be the fourth floor or whatever. And she goes there, and someone's, you know, doing their makeup and hair, and then they don't have a key to the office. So she sat in a cubicle her first day because they had no key to the Commerce Secretary's office. I mean, I didn't have a mattress my first day in the governor's mansion. When I got sworn in, my wife and I went to the governor's mansion. It was the wildest thing. I had to call my brother-in-law, who's in the trucking industry in Winston, and he ordered a bed from the Association for the Blind in Winston. They delivered the bed, so Ann and I slept on a mattress on the floor in the governor's mansion. So you assume this immediate transition occurs. So.
Lest we forget about John, did you have a question, John?
Yeah, I sure did, but thoroughly enjoyed listening to both y'all discuss issues. my question, because I'm getting ready to hopefully serve as Charlotte too on city council at large this upcoming election.
Oh, good luck.
My question is this: doesn't this proposed distribution of the sales tax really ends up dividing all North Carolinians, and as we discussed earlier, will hurt tourism statewide, and then also lead to tax increases for millions of North Carolinians?
Yeah, it will. In fact, I was in Columbus County last week, which is right outside of New Hanover County, outside of Wilmington and Whiteville, North Carolina. And Columbus County would benefit by $1 million or $2. It's a county of probably just over 5,000 people. They went, "We're all for it." In Columbus County, I said, "I'm against it because you're going to be hurting New Hanover County in Wilmington area. And if you hurt Wilmington, it'll hurt Whiteville and that area as much. You don't kill the economic engines of the state to help other areas, because those other areas, we're all dependent upon each other." And I don't agree with this type of class warfare that I often see out of more liberal Democrats, and I'll disagree with it with my more conservative Republicans also.
John, thank you for your call. Let me go to Mark in Kings Mountain. Mark, welcome.
Yes, I'd like to ask the governor what's going on with the Senate. It seems to me that we have a far-right part in the Republican Party that's going off, just like the far left in the Democratic Party. And one thing I've always admired about you, you've always been a sensible guy in the middle. But I don't understand why some of those problems that y'all have can't be taken care of behind closed doors instead of battling out the public.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I had, thank you, Mark. I had Governors Hunt and Martin over to the House not too long ago. In fact, Jim Martin spent the night. It was just great.
Did you have a mattress for him?
I had a mattress. I had a rocking chair on the porch. We had a wonderful time. And but, you know, both Hunt and Martin told me they had very similar battles with their own legislature. It's a typical issue of separation of powers and whose responsibility is to execute the law, whose responsibility is to make laws. It's kind of ironic. I am now suing as governor both President Obama, because I think he has overstepped his boundary in making law instead of executing law, especially on immigration issues. And at the same time, I'm suing my own legislature. Along with Jim Hunt and Jim Martin have joined me in that lawsuit, and we won the first round with three-judge panel, where at times I think the legislature, very similar to what the Democrats did with for 10 years under Bass, Knight, and Rand, are doing the same thing, where they're wanting to not only make law, but they're wanting to tell the executive branch how to execute law. And I've got to draw the line, not just for me, but for future governors, because it's going to be very important. My cabinet secretaries are allowed to manage the operations of the state of North Carolina and not have to manage through a legislative committee.
How much of this nature. Friction between you and the legislature, which has been going on for several years, at least after the honeymoon period, has to do with the fact that you are, as the governor, is elected statewide in every district, whereas the senators and the House people are they only have their one little fiefdom to worry about, and they have to play to their base in that fiefdom.
I think those are natural dynamics. You play to your customer base, and you're right. The legislators are in typically, both Republicans and Democrats, are in gerrymandered districts where those are the people who are their bosses. And as governor and other members of the Council of State, we have to appeal to all of North Carolina, and we should appeal to all of North Carolina, not just for the next election, but because it's the right thing to do.
And, of course,
I do the same thing as mayor, by the way. I had district reps who went, all they cared about was their district, and they were fighting for their district, and me as mayor had to say, wait a minute, let's look at this from a whole Charlotte perspective.
You were viewed when you were the mayor here for 14 years as a relatively moderate, progressive mayor who supported development and the arena and the light rail and things like that, which got under the skin of a lot of Republicans mm-hmm. who didn't support those things, were conservative Republicans. You went to Raleigh and you upset a lot of people who believed in you for those things because you seemed to take a little tack to the right. Now you seem to be taking a little tack to the middle again. Is that because election season is looming large?
I disagree with your theory. I haven't moved at all one way or the other. I take issue by issue.
But you signed off on a lot of very conservative bills.
Well, wait a minute. Conservative bills, I think, by the Charlotte Observer, doesn't mean it's a very conservative bill. For example, voter ID to me is not a conservative bill. It's a common sense bill that it's in most states in the United States of America. But they said, oh, I'm a radical because we're going to require a voter ID to vote. I mean, that is not a conservative bill. It's a common sense bill. So I think some of the examples that the left editorial pages and the Chris Fitzsimons of the world said were conservative were common sense. In fact, if you polled most people, 80% of them would agree with such things as voter ID, regardless of what the New York Times or the Huffington Post had to say, or your favorite channel, MSNBC.
Stop it. Let me thank you for your call, Mark. Let me go to Bill in Charlotte. Welcome to the program. You're on WFAE.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm a huge fan. Pat, thank you so much for what you do for our great state. Thanks so much for what you've done for Charlotte. I recently helped produce a film that was filmed up in Asheville called The World Made Straight. It was a film made by a North Carolina director, made by all North Carolinians about North Carolina. And wanted to ask you, what do you think actually will happen with our film incentives? And did anything related to the Koch brothers and Chick-fil-A help move our existing film incentives down to Georgia?
I've got another question about that from Chris on Facebook, who says, please extend the film incentives, the $10 million grant program, of which Under the Dome took $5 million in one shot, that's a CBS show, isn't working. All of those jobs that would be coming to North Carolina are now going to South Carolina and Georgia.
Well, Georgia is given out money like I've never seen before to get the film money, and I'm not.
Is that because we're not offering it anymore, so they're going to take what they can get?
No, they're offering a lot of cash, upfront cash, which right. I promise as governor, I'm not going to offer upfront cash for any businesses, whether it's film industry or corporations. What I'm going to offer is job development grants, reimbursements for people that have invested in North Carolina, paid the taxes, and they get a reimbursement on those taxes. But the film credits that were under the previous administration last year or the previous year cost us $80 million. And an economic model showed it didn't come close to bringing $80 million of new revenue into state coffers, not even close, because we were given refunds different
but
than
how the, is that what, measured? Because there are a lot of people who actually live in the state. I'm just asking. A lot of people live in the state. They've been employed for years as props people and grips and costume people. They don't have jobs anymore.
Well, a lot of the people that were that the money was going to, and I'll give you an example, the Comedy Channel got $350,000 during the Democratic Convention. They come and they go. And they shouldn't have got $350,000 cash. They were coming to the Democratic Convention anyway, and they went to the Republican Convention. We shouldn't have to pay the Comedy Channel $350,000 cash, which could go to teachers.
Them? Did Tampa pay them?
I don't know if Florida has a film credit or not. I have no idea.
Okay.
But I think that was a waste. So I'm going to call. I'm looking for investments and long-term sustainable returns on the investments that the state taxpayers of North Carolina make. And what I'm doing, for example, if a movie theater makes a long-term investment in, for example, a movie company,
production company,
they're going to get the same sort of incentives that a manufacturing company would get. And that's, to me, is fair. And I'm not going to treat one industry different from another.
Eric emails, I'm one of those people that Mike referred to in referring to North Carolina taxes. I'm paying more in taxes than ever before, almost $800 with two girls in college and a hearing-impaired son. I'm 54 and find it hard to save for retirement when the state is taking my income. I vote every time the polls open. Republicans at the state level have hurt me.
Well, I can't respond to every individual taxpayer because I don't know if he's also earned more money, therefore he's paying more taxes, which tends to be the case. If you earn more money, you pay more taxes. So it's very difficult for me to respond to each individual tax return. I'm paying a lot in taxes right now, too. I don't know if I'm paying more than last year or not, but I know this. When you get your paycheck, mm-hmm. your income taxes from the state of North Carolina is 2% less than it was the previous years.
Let's go to Kelly in Indian Trail. Kelly, you're on WFAE.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a question for Pat about the Hope for Haley bill. Last year, he stood in front of dozens of families of epileptic children and signed a bill that was supposed to make access to medical marijuana, specifically CBD oil, available to families like mine. And the bill has proven to be a complete failure, and I want to know when we're going to get some moves on that bill and how he plans to do it.
That's a great question. I did enjoy the families, and I just felt so sorry for the families and especially their daughters and sons who are dealing with this issue. I am examining. I'm still trying to figure out why that bill did not work because people thought it would. However, at the same time, I don't think you just open the door for medical marijuana because what we have found out in other states, that's really just legalization of marijuana. But I'm very open to looking at, you know, prescribed type of any medicine which would help these children. And if that's the type of cannabis that would help, then that would be clearly acceptable, but it had to be very clearly defined and regulated at this point in time. And I'm very open to your ideas and other ideas on how to make that a better solution, especially for these young children.
Tracy emails, well, Governor McQuarrie, count me as one of some people. I have been hit very hard by the elimination of the medical expense deduction, as have most of the retirees I have spoken to about this change. Would you please provide some explanation of the rationale for this change? It seems designed to disproportionately hit older and sicker North Carolinians.
That is something we're reviewing right now. But again, the concept was to flatten the tax, have less tax write-offs, and then less tax overall on your income tax. Mm-hmm. And it's a basic philosophy of flattening the taxes and not having all the tax credits that we had loophole after loophole after loophole. And you're seeing this at the federal level for the past 10 or 20 years where they're trying to close certain loopholes. Of course, one person's loophole is another person's benefit. And in this case, that's a major benefit, especially for retirees. And we're looking at that, and we're looking at challenging. I mean, look, I'm having a little disagreement with my Senate right now on the historical tax credit, which some of my colleagues go, well, wait a minute, why we shouldn't put the historical tax credit back in. I disagree because I see no relevance to how that applies to the income tax, because the historical tax credit is actually rebuilding the town centers, both small and large, of cities and towns across North Carolina. And this is an area where I'm disagreeing with. By the way, the Republicans in the House of Representatives and the Democrats passed it almost unanimously, an historical tax credit, which would help Morganton, which would help Wadesboro, which would help Spencer, you name the town, and Charlotte, the North Davidson area, for example, restoring historical buildings. And I think you need to make some exceptions, and that's where we constantly need to modify what the tax program is. But anytime you make a modification in any tax program, it does take the pocket money from someone else. And just like the sales tax program that Senator Harry Brown wants to introduce, it would help his county and his district, but it takes the money from someone else. So anytime you ask for a special, something for you, the money doesn't just come out of the sky. What I evaluate every year in my budget.
Let's talk about another tax we haven't talked about yet. House and Senate leaders announced, I think, a deal last week to gradually cut a few pennies off the state gas and diesel fuel tax over the next couple of years. That would cancel a much more aggressive cut that would have removed more than $400 million in revenues. Where do you stand on this most recent proposal?
I agree with it. I agree with the House and Senate, and that's where and they went through a lot of negotiations. And I want to compliment the Republicans in doing this, because there was a temptation to lower the gas tax by a large amount and say, look what we've done for you. But in the long run, that would have ended up costing the taxpayers more.
Would this new proposal replace the proposal to have everybody, whether they drove or not, regardless of how many miles they drove, pay a $120 fee per year?
I think there are a lot of proposals out there right now. You've got to remember all these legislators. Just the last day of bills was filed last week, and that's the way Raleigh works. So every individual member of the House and Senate introduced all these bills, and I haven't got the chance to review every bill.
Because Republicans don't like taxes. That's no secret. But a fee is a tax, isn't it?
Yes. Absolutely.
And it's a disproportionate tax, because if you drive an Escalade and I drive a Toyota Prius – $120 a year doesn't cover the cost of that Escalade, but it does cover the cost of the Prius and then some.
Which makes the case that every tax decision you make benefits some and hurts others, and there's a cause and effect. If you want to cut taxes, then you have to determine where the revenue is going to be. And if you want, I have a lot of Democrats who are asking for new funding for this program, and the question I'm going to ask is, where's the money going to come from?
But both that proposal, which seems disproportionate, and the sales tax proposal seems to be a subsidy for certain areas at the expense of another area. And Republicans don't like that when Democrats recommend it. Why do they like it when they recommend it?
I don't agree with my fellow Republicans on those proposals. And I'm stating it publicly and privately. And so I will speak against proposals that I think are wrong for North Carolina, whether they come from Republicans or Democrats. And I make then, by the way, counter proposals. And I'm doing just that. I just presented over a $20 billion budget, and I spent 3 months doing it. And I think it's a good budget for North Carolina, and I think it's going to continue what I call the Carolina comeback, because our economy is coming back, but we still have a lot of work to do.
When we come back, we will talk about your transportation plan, other tax plans, and a few other topics as well, and take more calls, and I'll share some emails and Facebook and Twitter comments with you as well. It's Governor Pat McCrory this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC TV. Tonight, presenting Carolina Oncologists in No Evidence of Disease at 8 o'clock, and Ken Burns' Cancer, the Emperor of All Maladies at 9. Information at unctv.org. And Tyndall Subaru Gastonia. March delivers the new Subaru 2015 Legacy with Subaru EyeSight driver assist technology, available now for test drives. Details at tyndallsubaru.com. The co-pilot who crashed a German plane had reportedly been treated for depression. And on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes, she and her guests talk about new airline safety rules being considered and compensation for victims' families. And I want to remind you that next Thursday night, this Thursday night at the Evening News, we'll be there for a special musical edition of Charlotte Talks featuring the local band Sinners and Saints. It starts at 7. We'd like you to be there, and we have information on our website about it at WFAE.org.
Do you remember your first time?
My first time? First time of what?
It's a little uncomfortable. Should I talk about it now?
Your first time listening to NPR's Morning Edition, that is.
I was 6 years old riding around in my parents' car, and I was like, what is this stuff? And I just kept listening.
No matter how many times you've listened, listen again each weekday to Morning Edition from NPR News.
You can hear Morning Edition from 5 until 9 here on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today with Governor Pat McCrory, who's in town to revisit his old stomping grounds for one.
I come home about every weekend.
Really?
My house is still here. I still consider Charlotte my home, and my dog still spends time here. So, Ann and I did a great event, however. We were in Raleigh at the mansion, and Saturday we had all the military families mm-hmm. who spouses are overseas, and we did an Easter egg hunt for their kids, and it was one of the most moving experiences Ann and I have had. It was fantastic.
Since the 1920s, transportation, roads, et cetera, infrastructure have been a major topic and a stumbling block occasionally for North Carolina. You are proposing, or you're trying to put together, a 25-year transportation plan for the state, which you have compared to a similar plan that you put together for Charlotte when you were the mayor here. What is in that plan? And how would you fund it?
We're actually already implementing that plan. And the first part of that plan was changing the formula of how we spend our money. And this was something I tried to do as mayor for 14 years and failed in trying to influence Raleigh. But we were successful in a bipartisan way in Raleigh, where we now, instead of having the equity formula, we have the mobility formula, which determines where we put roads based upon congestion, safety, and economic development. Before, none of those three factors determined where we put our roads. In fact, remember in the last 5, 10, 20 years, when you drive to the beach, you know, the lanes would go from 2 lanes to 8 lanes, back to 2 lanes, mm-hmm. back to 8 lanes, and you never knew the common reason. Why is this happening? Of course, where it was widest, it was always named after a former governor or former senator or DOT member, which meant roads were being built based upon politics. I changed that when I went to Raleigh. And in addition, my DOT members, each DOT member and the governor had a pot of money they could play with. You know, distribute a little $1 million here, $1 million there. I've taken that away. I mean, that's changing the culture of state government, where now we spend money where we get the biggest bang for our buck.
What about 485? What about 77?
Well, we're recovering from the bad designs of 485. I mean, 485 is a perfect example out at Ballantyne, where they built 8 lanes one direction, and then when we get to a little area at the Ballantyne area, they narrowed it, which means we have a choke point everywhere. Mm-hmm. If you notice, I don't think that part of the road is named after anyone. I wouldn't want my name on that part of the choke point. So what we're trying to do is now recover from that very bad design and implementation, which was made in the past 5 to 10 years, and recover from that. But once you make a mistake in road building, it's very hard to recover. And you see that with several interstate designs in the Charlotte region.
Is putting a toll road north of Charlotte on 77 using the HOV lane a good idea, or is it a mistake?
I think it's a good idea for the short term.
Short term, it's 50 years.
No, let me explain the short term. Let me finish my sentences. I think it's a good idea because that road wouldn't have been built for another 15 years based upon the revenue streams that we have. And this will speed up that construction. This is one lane, by the way, one lane which will be told.
Why don't we have money to build roads in major cities given our revenue streams? Why is that?
Part of it is because the money's been redistributed based upon politics and not based upon a common sense formula which actually considered where the cars
are. I thought you fixed
that. That has been fixed, but there is not enough revenue in the stream, and that's what we're doing right now. And I'm going to be recommending a bond referendum for the voters for this year, which hopefully in the next 2 weeks. Very similar to what I did as mayor of Charlotte. I'm going to be recommending both a highway bond referendum and a infrastructure bond referendum, because we also have a lot of dilapidated buildings in our universities, mm-hmm. you know, those 60s buildings, including UNC Charlotte, that were built, and the operating cost is, you know, it's like trying to keep alive a D building in real estate. You're wasting your money putting money into
that.
These
would be two referenda.
That's correct.
$1 billion referenda.
Correct.
We always have to explain referenda when we talk about it at the county and the city level. Does it require an equal amount of explanation at the state level when you're talking to people around the state?
Yeah, it will. It will be, and that's where I'm – in fact, I spent 2 or 3 hours in a meeting on Friday at the Executive Mansion with all my financial people to go, okay, where's the list of projects? How do we develop that list? How do we prioritize that list? And are we doing it based upon – the right things, or are we doing it based upon politics? And we're also looking at the financial models on how much we can afford. And right now the state treasurer says we can afford this amount of debt. We'd have operating revenue to pay off that debt, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
You and I remember President Eisenhower. Very few other people remember him. But anyway.
I remember him when he was alive. You remember him when he was president.
I do. Yes, I do.
You're a lot older than I. He was alive. I was born in 1956. You were born what in?
I'm not telling you. I'm not a politician.
I was born. So he was president when I was born. And I use him as a role model.
I know. That's why I'm bringing it up, because in large measure, he's responsible for the interstate highway system right. that we have today. And you have said that you consider yourself an Eisenhower Republican, a Republican who believes in building infrastructure. Eisenhower was a moderate Republican. Is this another indication that you're moving back to the center?
Well, there were some areas where Eisenhower was probably accused of being too conservative. Or you've got to take issue by issue. You know, this blanket statement of who's liberal and who's conservative, I think, is way overblown. But Eisenhower was a person who believed government had a role in investing in infrastructure, mm-hmm. because then infrastructure would help private sector commerce. And it's private sector commerce which gets the economy going and helps everyone. And if you don't have the connections between the East and the West, the North and the South, and the interstate connections, which I testified in Washington just 2 weeks ago to both Republicans and Democrats, if we stop this investment in infrastructure, it's going to harm our nation. It's going to harm our state.
Let's take another call. Let's go to James in Charlotte. Welcome to the program, James.
Hi, Governor. Welcome back to Charlotte.
Thank you very much. Great to be back home.
As mayor, whenever we had some large events in Charlotte, the HRC gala and the Pride parade celebration, you always refused to sign a letter of welcome to those organizations, and it always made it feel very unwelcoming. Now, as governor, are you looking forward to signing the Religious Freedom Bill to make sure that gays and lesbians feel even less welcome in our state?
Thank you for that question. One issue I had as mayor with some of these groups was they were doing a major function at Marshall Park where there was pictures and really obscene things at Marshall Park, and I spoke very highly against it.
But the human rights dinner the human rights dinner that's held here every year, you were not exactly welcoming
Why?
To them either.
Can I finish my sentence? I'm trying to answer the question from the caller. And the second item is, I think on both the left and the right, you know, the left here brought up transgender bathrooms, which is a totally ridiculous argument and should have never been brought up. And on the right, I think some of the items that are in the so-called religious freedom bill also make no sense. And I've stated that for the record. I'm always trying to find what was the problem they're trying to correct on both the transgender bathroom issue that the Democrats brought up in Charlotte, and that some of my Republicans are bringing up in Raleigh regarding the freedom of religion. What is the problem they're trying to solve? And I haven't seen it up to this point in time.
Indiana just passed their Religious Freedom Restoration Act, is what they call it, that's caused protest, and it may result in them losing some business. The legislature here is considering, as we said, that bill, a similar bill, and this one would exempt magistrates from performing gay marriages, even though they are now legal, according to the Supreme Court, if the magistrate has a religious objection to performing that. If that bill passes, Do you sign it or do you veto it?
At this time, I would not sign it the way it's written because I don't, and I've stated for the record, I don't think you should have an exemption or a carve out when you swore an oath to the Constitution of North Carolina or to the Constitution of the United States of America. I put my left hand on a Bible and say I have to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state of North Carolina. And even if there are things in the Constitution that I disagree with that are upheld by the courts, it's my job as governor, as it was my job as mayor, to uphold and execute the law. And I don't think anyone who swears on their Bible or any other document to the Constitution, then they are required to follow the Constitution, and we shouldn't have carve-outs to that Constitution.
Should individual businesses be allowed to reject service of people that they don't agree with? Because if it's just it may not just end up being LGBT people. It may be people who wear hijab or people who practice a different faith other than Christianity that people say, I'm not serving you.
I guess the question is what they think. How do we know what they think? It's what people do, and I don't know how a business would determine what are you thinking when you come in. In fact, I disagree with laws that we have on the criminal justice books about what people are thinking will determine their sentence when they commit a crime. It's the crime that made a difference, not what they were thinking when they committed the crime. And this thought, it's almost like George Orwellian, 1984, of the thought police. And both the left and the right are trying to determine what do people think when they perform certain actions, and that's not our job in government.
You
today.
Just said that in both on the left and on the right,
right,
you sometimes look at them and try to figure out what it is, what problem it is that they're trying to solve by the proposals they're
that's
putting
correct.
Forward. And Aaron in Concord writes, like so much of the recently passed conservative legislation, it is fear-mongering, not problem-fixing, and the governor signed much of it. This voter ain't buying the move back to the middle by the governor.
If he would give me an example, I'd like an example, because he didn't give one example in his question of what I've signed that's fear-mongering. So if he gives me an example, I'd be glad to respond to the example. I've been told that about voter ID, and I think they're wrong. That's not fear-mongering. It's common sense.
Okay. Go back. Let's go to another area.
That's the kind of rhetoric that I think hurts both the left and the right, is calling everything extreme and radical, and that usually means you ran out of logic in defending what your case was.
And yet you've criticized the liberal Democrats and the liberal media. Isn't that kind of
– No, I don't mind using the term
brush.
Liberal and conservative if it applies to a specific act or a piece of legislation. But I do think the word extreme and radical is used far too much in politics and by the editorial writers, including right here in Charlotte.
Here's another area that you appear to be at odds with fellow GOPers in the legislature. Last week, a bill was filed, Senate Bill 604, that would require abortion clinics to have written agreements with hospitals in case of emergencies. It would also impose new requirements on doctors who perform abortions or induce miscarriage after the 16th week of a pregnancy to provide substantial documentation to the state, including an ultrasound image, and those restrictions would increase after the 20th week of pregnancy. The bill would give doctors the right to refuse abortions if it conflicted with their moral, ethical, or religious beliefs, and you campaigned on a pledge not to further restrict access to abortions. Is this another example of the two Carolinas or of two Republican parties operating in the state? And if that bill passes, what do you do?
Well, first of all, I haven't had a chance to see that bill against their hundreds of bills that have been introduced lately. But I will say this, that my Health and Human Services Secretary, I was accused by the left of changing all the abortion laws in North Carolina, and they were dead wrong. Dr. Aldona Voss introduced new basic requirements for abortion clinics, which are common sense, that does not restrict abortion, but it requires safety measures in abortions. We had an abortion clinic in this region and in the Asheville region that literally was not cleaning the floor or cleaning the equipment properly in between abortions. And those standards are not right for any type of surgery, especially abortion. That's common sense requirements. But I rejected any premise of going, you have to have certain zoning and parking and other things that were obviously an attempt to stop what is considered legal practice by the laws. But I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure that we have safety requirements in any type of surgery, including abortions. And we literally had to shut down a clinic. I forget which one it was, in Asheville or here, which was – it was mistreating women. And it wasn't – It wasn't safe.
Aaron has given you a follow-up. You asked for an example of what he was talking about.
Right.
He said, I referenced...
I love new media.
I referenced voter ID, no data to back up the need.
Voter ID is not a radical or extreme thing. It is common sense to say if someone goes in the voting booth, just like you have to go get Sudafed now. In order to get Sudafed at the Rite Aid in Charlotte, you have to show your ID.
Right.
If you require, we're not discriminating against anyone to show an ID to get Sudafed, nor are we discriminating against anyone to show an ID to vote, to ensure that we protect the integrity of the ballot. And if you don't look for bad things going on at the ballot box, you aren't going to find them. It's kind of like insider training. And no one's been looking for the last 10 or 20 years for irregularities at the ballot box.
David emails, how does the governor feel about movements in the legislature to pass bills restructuring local government councils, Wake County and Greensboro, for instance? And I'm going to add to that, could Charlotte be next?
Absolutely, and I strongly disagree with it. You know, there's a common trend that I've seen at both local and federal government and state government by both Republicans and Democrats, and that's where I had city council members who wanted to do the city manager's work when that was not what they were elected to do. I had school board members who wanted to play principal here in Mecklenburg for a while. The same thing applies to my legislature. Sometimes they used to be a former county commissioner. They become a state senator. Then they want to start impacting what they did.
They want to run the airport.
They want to run water systems in Asheville. They want to tell the Greensboro City Council how many representatives they should have on the Greensboro City Council. I disagree with that, and I've stated it publicly. The dilemma we have in my legislative system is these are considered local bills where the governor has no authority to veto them. But I'm stating for the record, if a Republican or Democrats, if they want to be mayor, if they want to be a city councilman, if they want to be airport director, go apply for that job or run for it.
Are you finished? I don't want to interrupt.
You're good. You are one of the best, Mike Collins.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Governor Pat McCrory, who comes here periodically.
When do you want to come back? You just tell me. Invite me. You've got my cell number.
Yes, I do. But you don't answer. But you know what
it's not true.
Thank you for that.
Hey, thanks, Mike. It's great to be back. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your calls.